Welcome to the Procurement Software Podcast, where we aim to educate and inspire you about how technology is changing and shaping our profession. The truth is, there's never been a more exciting time to be in procurement, but only if you're one of those organizations that's embracing the change and driving new developments. And this podcast is all about giving you the tools to help you get there. So buckle up and let's get right into this week's show. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Procurement Software Podcast. And my guest today is Rujul Zapade, founder and CEO of Zip. And if you haven't heard of Zip, then I think you've been hiding under a rock, because these guys are really making waves with their intake platform. So Rahul, just give a quick intro and then I will start off by asking you a classic intro question, which is, you've just been appointed head of procurement and the CFO has given you a $50,000 budget to spend on driving modernization and digitization of your function. What would you spend it on? So introduce yourself and then I'm going to throw you straight in with that question.
Yep. James, thank you so much for having me and very excited to be here today. I'm Rujul, you know, co-founder and CEO here at Zip. And that's a great question. That's a great way to start. You know, I think that's actually a dynamic that I think we see fairly often, right? Lots of new procurement teams, especially with the macro climate that I think we've all been in these last 2 years or so. Procurement and control and visibility over spend have just become so front and center in this environment. And so, you know, starting a new procurement function from scratch is certainly something that comes up. You know, the way I would answer it is, you know, I think ultimately everything starts at the point of origination. And so if you have visibility as a procurement leader into when, you know, where your demand is in the organization, right? Like the minute somebody's like, oh, I might need to do business with a new supplier, or, oh, I have a problem, I think I might need a new supplier to help solve that for me. Like the earlier you can get involved, the more leverage you have, because you can redirect to an existing supplier that this person just has no idea we already have, that we do business with. It could be, okay, this is actually a huge project. We should probably like get at least a couple of suppliers to look at this and sort of compete, right? And so it always starts at the point of origination. And for us, that's intake, that one front door experience with no training required. Because if you have to train somebody to use software in 2023, you sort of already lost the battle before the war before the battle has begun. And so, my view of all this is starting with intake and starting with like the point of origination. Because if you have control and visibility over everything that's occurring at the earliest point in time, you can then figure out what to do with it. And you even know how much demand you have versus finding out much later in the process.
Yeah, 100%. So it's really what you're saying then, if I can paraphrase you, is it's all about early involvement, whether that means getting a better deal or just avoiding or bringing under the umbrella a lot of what would otherwise have been break spend, essentially.
Exactly. Or not even just necessarily maverick spend, even spend that, you know, almost gets sort of brought up and you get visibility when someone has a contract. Because if they're holding an MSA from a vendor, that vendor thinks that probably going to win that business. So it is harder for you to negotiate, even if like you are actually going to proceed, or it's hard to kill it because now this person is evaluated for 2 months and like they're really emotionally attached to buying this thing from this party and like you can unwind it, but that's hard. I mean, that costs you, you know, not money, but it costs you something internally or someone in leadership, you know, for them to do that. And so, you know, it's not even just maverick spend. It might even be regular spend, just getting involved earlier.
So the first time I came across you guys was I was on a webinar with Felix back in probably around April, May 2021. And you were very new in this space and you've kind of created this whole intake category as a result of your product. You've moved now from being an intake solution to what you now describe as intake to pay. And what I'm really curious is about is that you could have taken this in so many different functions. So I'm just curious to know what convinced you to go down that specific route.
No, that's a great question. You know, we created this category around intake orchestration. You know, another way to sort of frame it is, you know, I think I've heard intake to procure, which is sort of that upstream, you know, process from the traditional procure to pay. And what I will say is that, you know, we are and always will be an intake company, because that's the thing that you know, makes us special in the world. And that's the thing that we have the significant majority of our 100-person, you know, engineering development team dedicated to. But truth be told, if, you know, when we had started the company, you were like, hey, you know, when are you going to, you know, fill the downstream, the procure to pay side? You know, I would have been like, oh, it would, maybe many years from now. But what happened was we had so many customers that were, you know, actually really happy with the intake experience. And they were like, well, you know, Darts and Zip, our entire employee base, you know, 5,000 employees, I'm making up an example, like they all know that they need to go to Zip to kick off a request. All of the approvals and all the different teams, legal, security, IT, are used to it. And they're, you know, maybe reviewing in Zip as well. And so why can't you all just do the back end of it? Like, why can't you all just house the purchase order and do the invoice processing and that stuff? And we sort of felt, okay, like, let's pull that forward, because that came up so many times with so many customers, because we have earned their trust with our core product. And so we ended up, you know, this was about 2 years ago now, you know, also building a procure to pay product. And so we do intake to procure to pay for companies that want it. But I would say 9.5 times that still start with intake. And that's the place, like, that's the change that's occurred in the world that, you know, that sort of precipitated this need for a new category that, you know, that I think we ultimately created. The other thing, you know, to kind of point out is, like, I actually think to, like, do intake really well, it's really, really hard. And I say that because, you know, we have banks, for example, that might have 17 different types of risk teams reviewing spend. We have healthcare companies or healthcare systems that have totally different sets of people, teams, you know, with HIPAA and other regulations. We, of course, have tech companies. We have large enterprises that have, like, their own sort of set of flows. And so, like, that flexibility and the ability to sort of configure no code while also maintaining, you know, nearly 100 different types of permissioning controls and permission groups. And, like, that level of flexibility and complexity is actually much, much greater, is what I've found from an engineering and product and design burden sort of perspective. Like, it's much harder to get that to work and build that really, really well than actually the more traditional downstream procure to pay, which might be counterintuitive. But anyways, that's the other point.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that either. But yeah, I've never built any procurement tech, so who would I be to know? I actually got to see a demo of your products when I was at DPW in October. And one of the things that strikes anyone that would see a demo of your products is just how smooth the UX, the user experience is. And I know that, you know, based on your founding team, you've come from a lot of these really successful B2C tech companies where UX is king. Do you think procurement even realizes that they have a UX problem with some of the legacy tech that's still being used?
I honestly think that I've actually been so, you know, I remember when we started the company too, I was actually so pleasantly surprised, because I actually think people totally realize that, hey, there's a usability problem here. And there's nothing wrong with that system, maybe. Like, it's a great system of record. It's still where we store, you know, our POs or, you know, whatever, you know, contracts, whatever our downstream data. But the system of engagement was lacking. And then the price that you pay for that, if you will, is that, well, then people don't, it's not intuitive. So then they don't, like, either know what to do or they don't do it until it's later, right? Because, like, oh, the right path is just so complicated. Like, what's human nature? Human nature is I'll just do that later. And so what happens is then you can't be strategic because you're not looped in earlier. And so you have, like, that's like the price that you pay for not having, like, great sort of user experience that drives really good, you know, adoption. And yeah, you know, in terms of the way that we look at and I think about user experience, so I used to work at an Airbnb before starting Zip, along with my co-founder Lou. You know, we both worked at Airbnb, and, you know, I worked on the search product and the search platform teams at Airbnb. So a lot of, if you go to Airbnb.com, you know, how that search experience works, a lot of components of that. And, you know, what we realized is that, you know, a company like Airbnb has millions of people visiting Airbnb.com every single day. And so whenever we're making a change, right, like, we change a button this way, we make it slightly bigger, or we change the way that a filter works. If you're, you know, searching for certain dates for a destination you're going to, we would actually be able to A/B test that and get to statistical significance in the matter of a day to 2 days across 10 million people that are actually searching over those 2 days, for example. So, you know, you do all these little incremental experiments and just keep improving continuously, hundreds of experiments a year. Right? Like, that's the level of pace. And that's because as a consumer business, you have to earn the right to the business every second of every minute of every hour of every day. Because if you don't, someone's going to close that browser window and go somewhere else, right? And unfortunately, in enterprise software, and certainly, you know, in this space, in financial software more broadly, like you actually only have to earn the right to the business, you know, once every 3 years, maybe even once every 5 years. And you only have to earn that right with like maybe the CFO or the procurement like leadership, right? Like somebody in a position of power internally. But who gets forgotten in all that? Well, it's the end user, the person that just needs their thing. And ultimately, if you actually solve for them, it makes everything else much easier, but they've just been forgotten. And so everyone in procurement and finance, unfortunately, just so used to swimming against the current and against the grain. But if you actually make it easier to adopt and follow the process, suddenly you sort of find that, like, wait a minute, like the entire current is going the other way. And now it's actually much easier. Like you don't have to fight with the business to like get them to like loop you in or earlier or follow a certain process. Like they just do it, which I think we've pleasantly found is something that people are just kind of shocked by, because it's just like they weren't expecting that, like in the most positive way. They're just expecting that there would be some pushback or whatever, but there's not if you solve for the user experience.
I'd like to just break down one of the things that you said in that last answer, because it sort of made me curious. When you were saying that you were doing A/B testing and little tweaks to buttons and features when you were at Airbnb, on a B2B platform like Zip, do you have enough users to be able to get statistically significant data within that short period of time to be able to do that very same thing? Or is it a much longer process and you're happy with that because, as you said, you've got a lot more customer loyalty if someone's typically signing a 3-year contract rather than just clicking away in their browser on one of the consumer-based apps?
Yeah, it's a great question. Statistical significance is certainly harder because there are certainly not, you know, the volume of people that are going in and logging in is obviously much lower. I do think that I don't actually know exactly, but I think we've got, you know, close to 1 million users in Zip now across all of our customers. But what I would say is that, you know, what we tried to do is really hire, you know, the absolute best engineers, designers, product managers in the world. We only hire in San Francisco and we have some in New York. And we really like, you know, ultimately the best designers, you know, work at consumer companies. And so we actually have like our entire design team comes from consumer companies. And so they're used to a certain bar of user experience, because if you didn't maintain that bar, like you wouldn't have a consumer business, like the business wouldn't exist. It wouldn't make it. And so, you know, that's why I think in many ways, you know, the demo that you referenced that you saw at DPW, like it comes through in the product, because like we're actually building for the consumer like use case and mindset. And it's because, you know, ultimately, like, of course, the end user is a consumer of procurement and a customer of procurement internally to the organization. But anyone that works in procurement too, like, you know, is also like, you know, we all use, you know, DoorDash and Uber Eats and, you know, all these other apps as like personally, as humans and consumers generally in the world. And if I had to use a training manual to figure out how to order food on Uber Eats, like Uber Eats wouldn't exist as a business. Somebody else would exist and they would have died by now. So, you know, like I think everyone sort of expects a certain level of, you know, usability and software today in a way that they maybe didn't 10 years or certainly 20 years ago. And so, you know, we're just very, very, very focused on that. And the last thing I'll say on that too is that, like, you know, I think a lot of companies in this general space, I think are, and this is a philosophical thing for me, but like, they're like sales-led companies, right? They'll say they have a product, but like the engineers are in India or, you know, in another region or whatever. Like they're not like, it's like front and center. It's, you know, it's a sales-led company. It's led by sales. And we're not that at Zip. We're a product-led company. Both my co-founder, Lou, and I, Lou was an engineering leader at Airbnb and I worked in product management. And so neither of us has ever worked at a company that had a sales team. We both have consumer backgrounds. And also neither of us actually worked in procurement or finance or any of these core functions. We were actually end users building products. And so we really, you know, maintain that ethos at Zip and really care about, you know, ultimately we live and die by the product and how happy you're.
Interesting approach compared to a lot of the legacy software that's out there. And that sort of leads on nicely, going back to you now offering the end-to-end product as intake through to pay. If I challenge you and say, okay, well, a lot of your early users, especially with you being based in San Francisco, a lot of your early users were tech and IT companies, and they're naturally going to be a little bit more forward-thinking and in some stages, maybe were even greenfield if they were rapidly scaling companies and they were implementing their first round of digitization in the procurement space. But now that you've got all of this funding and growth trajectory, how do you then replicate that? And how do you make that very same product applicable to the consumer goods conglomerate in Ohio, or the German tier one automotive company, or a Swiss bank or insurer? Because they're going to have almost certainly a legacy source to pay, source to contract platform in place, and no CPO or CFO is gonna put their hands on the table and say, okay, we messed up with this. It's sunk cost. We need to put something else in place.
Yeah, no, totally. And just to be clear, like, we are not actually trying to replace those systems at companies like that. That's actually not the intent at all. Our intent is just to solve the engagement issue and the adoption issue up front, and to say, hey, you might have this, you know, procure to pay or search to pay stack or system. We just want to help you work on the user experience layer on top and have intake actually help you get more adoption, so you can actually get more use out of that system, which is actually good for you and also good for that, you know, that company, that provider that actually, you know, is that source to pay company. Everybody actually benefits because more spend moves under management. There's earlier visibility into that spend. And really, you know, that's what we're solving for, just sitting on top, certainly not replacing. And you're right. I mean, you know, as a tech company, who is it easy to sell to early on when you have no customers and no employees? Tech companies, because they also used to have no customers and no employees at some point in time. So, you know, of course, to your point, we started off selling into tech. But what we've seen now across, I mean, we have, you know, many hundreds of customers now. And I think what we've seen is that, like, we've sort of moved well past that for a while now and have customers in pretty much every industry, from, you know, retail to banking to other financial services and insurance to healthcare to, you know, I can't even think of CPG, manufacturing, all sorts of industries. You know, you mentioned a bank, and like, we have European banks as customers, for example. And I think what we've seen is that, you know, ultimately the problem that everybody fundamentally has in indirect procurement is actually like kind of like the same thing. And it's like, I struggle with adoption. I struggle with getting people to follow the process early enough that I can drive the maximum amount of leverage for my business and for my, you know, in my role and capacity. And it's a usability and sort of lacking a front door to the engagement with, like, how do I engage procurement that, like, through software that, like, is a very clear thing that's easy. Like, how do I do that with that one front door? And then how do I manage all the cross-functional pieces of, you know, cybersecurity, resiliency? Like, how do I manage, like, all, like, what's happening across all these different teams? And now the teams might vary, right? If you're an oil and gas company, it's going to vary than if you're a healthcare company, right? And this is something we've seen across our customer base, but it's still like the same problem. It's just like maybe different types of stakeholders in the mix, but like there's still different stakeholders in the mix before, you know, you get to the traditional sort of rep to order sort of part of the process sort of downstream. And so, and what we've done and built is, one thing I think we like don't focus on sort of sharing enough is we really like ultimately, you know, the software is king, right? The product is king, but how you implement that product and actually set up the customer and the client for success also matters a lot. And so one of the things we've done is made a large investment in our incredible sort of customer, we call it our customer team, which is we really only hire ex-procurement professionals and leaders, or we hire, you know, procure to pay implementation experts from KPMG, Deloitte, you know, effectively the big four. So we have a team of roughly 30-ish folks, just over, I think. And they're really, really focused on just helping make sure that, like, you're really successfully set up. And so to that end, we've actually invested in best practice templates across a lot of these verticals and industries. And, you know, because ultimately it's not, you know, there are, every business is different, but it's not that different, you know, like ultimately it's just people trying to buy things from different vendors and get that spend approved from a spend perspective, but risk perspective and so forth.
So having that modular structure then, that if they don't necessarily want to remove their Ariba or Coop or whatever platform they have in situ, they can still do that and use you as the intake and orchestration layer on top of that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's exactly the intent.
Yeah. And I guess that over time, inevitably, you're growing your products and you're developing out and building a more robust platform that can cover more needs. So, you know, do you think that something like a strategic sourcing or a contract management functionality module will be the next thing that you build on top of that? Because once you do that, one could then argue that rather than being a complementary solution, you're then a direct competitor of some of these legacy tools. And that could really then put you head to head, couldn't it?
You know, I actually don't think about it that way because I think there's a lot of nuance in like the segment, the focus. And for us, like we look at these companies as partners and, you know, like we're partner of SAP. We're here to actually help drive more adoption for that downstream system, right? Like that's the way we see it. Like for us, we're here to just help provide that one front door and solve that intake and orchestration layer experience before you get into the system. And so, you know, I just look at it as like, we're just actually solving a different problem that's very closely related to, and, you know, and integration points obviously matter a lot, right? If you have one of these systems, but I look at it as a very sort of fundamentally different problem.
That's an interesting answer, actually. If you see them as being collaborators rather than competitors.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was going to ask you next, how relevant do you see SAP being in 5 years' time? And I don't just mean Ariba in that sense. I mean, you know, their whole end-to-end ecosystem. If you look at ERP or some of the other sort of niche-specific apps that they have, like Fieldglass, you know, you see everyone's trying to snap at their feet and take business away from them. And you know, they are an oil tanker, aren't they, a little bit in terms of change happens very slowly. They're a huge company. What do you think their position will be in this industry in 5 years from
now? Yeah, I mean, if I'm being honest, like, I don't think they're, any of these companies are going anywhere. Like, I have tremendous respect for SAP and they, you know, like, you know, their products solve a really core problem. The way I sort of view it is that, you know, the world changes and like new problems get created and new problems emerge. And then companies get started to solve those new problems. Because sometimes if it's a net new problem, it's just easier for, you know, a small set of people to like start something and solve that problem and latch on and then grow their organization. And like, that's how, you know, innovation happens in the world. And so I just look at us as a really small piece of all this, like in a sense, right? Like we're solving for this, you know, intake problem and intake and orchestration problem. But fundamentally, like I don't, you know, I actually don't, and this might be like, maybe other people say different things, but like for me, like, I don't think those companies are like the system of record is not going to fundamentally change from, you know, the ERP being SAP or being Oracle or being, you know, one of these companies. It's going to say that. It's just the work around it and the engagement with it where I think a lot more innovation will be. So, you know, in that sense, I don't actually expect that much change in a way in the next 5 years, which might be a controversial statement. So,
yeah, I would agree with you that I certainly don't think that SAP or Oracle or any of these big ERP providers are going anywhere. I'm just curious, and I think, you know, Dr. Eluzia Epstein did a great talk on this in at DPW. I just think that procurement as a function will probably not touch ERP that much. And yes, it will have to feed into it and it'll have to pull data from it and push data into it. But especially indirect procurement, direct is a little bit of a different beast, but indirect procurement, I don't really see it having much relevance going forward. I mean, yes, it will, like you say, that a business will still have to run on ERP, but yeah, the actual indirect procurement end-to-end, if you've got platforms like Zip, and then if you've got specialist platforms for risk management and contract management and sourcing, I don't really see a need for it.
No, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, I think like the unbundling, you know, will continue in a sense, and that's just a macro thing, right? Like, I mean, 50 years ago, you know, there was no Salesforce and you know, I don't know when Sybil Systems were started, but you know, that maybe didn't exist either. And so like even the customer record, like the source of truth for the record, the customer record and customer data was the ERP. And I think not that it isn't today, but it's just that like now if, you know, if you have a large business, you have a lot of customers, like you use Salesforce for that. And so like, there, you know, like, and that's like a much more progressed sort of unbundling of a very specific use case out of the ERP. And so I, you know, like philosophically, like I'm sure that will continue in some way, shape or form, but that doesn't change that. You know, the system of record remains the system of record. I think to your point, it means that like you might interact with it less because you're actually interacting with a different layer if you're an end user, your procurement leader, or, you know, another sort of stakeholder in the organization. So I completely agree with you, like philosophically.
Awesome. So gazing into the crystal ball a little bit with where you are now at Zip, what would you describe as being your biggest challenge, but, and then also on the flip side, your biggest opportunity in terms of where you are now and your roadmap of where you want to go?
Yeah. You know, I think for us, you know, our company has grown a lot, but the thing that I'm, you know, excited about and to continue to do, and, you know, I think has been a challenge, but I still spend a lot of time with our customers, of course, prospects as well, but much more customers. And, you know, I mean, I'm still maintaining, you know, 30 plus sort of one-on-ones with customers every month, if not more, and just staying close to the problem and the product and getting, like I have actually, I think during this call, some customer actually Slacked me some feedback about a feature that they thought could be better in a certain way. And so I actually appreciate that stuff because like ultimately, you know, that's the feedback that that makes us better as a company. And so, you know, just staying afloat of that though, as we've grown, I think has been a challenge, but something that I'm, you know, I remain sort of very excited about. And then the opportunity ahead is, you know, I'm just really excited for, you know, our product team and all of the, like we've really, you know, taken the sort of consumer sort of mindset to solving this problem. And so we do a tremendous amount of, you know, user research and, you know, like really in-depth sort of feedback sessions with our customers and like not even just our champions, but like the end users at their companies and, you know, like real people that are actually using the product, like really understand and get to the bottom of like how we can just continue to improve and you know, and get better as a company, as a product. And so I'm really just excited for, you know, a lot of our sort of roadmap and you know, capabilities that will continue to evolve and ship and deliver. Because I'm proud of the team for the rate of change, and you know, and I'm excited for what's to come.
I think that end user piece is vital, and it's always one of my beefs that center of excellence leaders are great process people and are great at making things happen, but if they've never used the system, that especially with some of this legacy tech, they don't know how bad it is to use on a day-to-day basis a lot of the time. So it's great to hear that you're actually going to the end user as well as the digital transformation champion in those businesses. Awesome. Okay, so quick fire round here, and I'm taking inspiration from Sam Jenks, Kodiak Hub, and the Way We Source podcast that do this. If you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be?
I think it'd still be San Francisco. I live in San Francisco and, you know, I think, I mean, I obviously work in tech and like, I think there's no better place to be. I know San Francisco maybe doesn't have the best rep in the news, but I would still pick San Francisco.
Got it. And then finally, what would be your guilty pleasure of choice? And it can be anything, but you've got to keep it clean. That's the only rule.
Oh, I like eating dark chocolate. So I have after every lunch or dinner, I always have like one piece of dark chocolate. I just have a lot of dark chocolate bars. I just eat one piece. I try to limit it to one piece, which I generally succeed in. But, you know, sometimes it's two or three or four. To be clear, small pieces.
That's a pick-me-up though as well after lunch, isn't it, as well? Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, so final question, Rujal. If someone wants to learn a little bit more about your product, where is the best place that we should send them?
Yeah, just our website, ziphq.com.
Awesome. Absolute pleasure talking to you, and it was great to actually meet with your team at DPW and see the product. So keep innovating and doing what you're doing, and all the best.
Likewise. No, thank you so much for the time and for having me.
Okay, so that was Rujal with Zip talking about some of the exciting things that they've got in the pipeline and their very unique approach to developing and growing a software business coming from the consumer space. Just before we sign off, don't forget to leave us a review or like us on LinkedIn. It helps us to reach more people and get the message of the podcast out there. Until next week, take care wherever you are in the world, and bye for now.